It would be from some believer in Bulgaria or Hungary or Poland or elsewhere, telling me of new troubles they were facing, new needs that had developed. Whatever the message, these letters always seemed to arrive just at the time I needed them most, to make me pack my bags once again and seek a visa for travel to some land in the world of the communists. It was on one of these trips that year that the courageous little car engine breathed its last. It happened in West Germany. I was on my way home from a trip to East Germany and Poland. With me in the car were two Dutch boys I had picked up in Berlin, students who had spent their Easter vacation working in the refugee camps. At 5 o'clock one afternoon, we were spinning along when suddenly there was a crackling sound in the rear of the car, and the engine died. We coasted to a stop and opened the little door in the rear, but nothing we could do would make it start again. Then I straightened up and saw that beside the road, at the spot where the car's own momentum had deposited us, was an emergency telephone box. I picked up the receiver and asked for a tow truck. Within 20 minutes, we were all bending over the engine with the manager of the service garage. He inspected the various parts in silence for some minutes, then walked forward and looked at the odometer. 97,000 kilometres, he read aloud. His puzzled frown had not left him. It's a good mileage, of course, and yet unless you've been over unusually rough terrain... Now I saw what was bothering him. A little shamefacedly, I admitted that the odometer had long since reached its maximum reading of 99,999 and flipped over the zero mark again. This was the second time it had registered 97,000. "Then I should say," said the manager, wiping the oil from his hands, "that you've got your money's worth. That engine just hasn't any more to give." "How long would it take to put in a new one?" He stopped to consider. "My crew leaves in 10 minutes. They could have a new engine in for you in an hour, but you'd have to pay them a good tip for staying overtime." "How much would the whole thing cost, including the tip?" 500 marks. Without hesitation, I said, "Go ahead. I'll go get some more money changed at the train station." It was on board the streetcar going to the station that I counted my money and realized that all I had with me would not make 500 marks. There'd be no help from the two students back at the garage. They were riding with me in the first place because they were flat broke. Should I go back and cancel the work order? No. I could see God's hand too clearly in all of this. Stopping precisely at the emergency telephone, having the engine wear out here in Germany where it came from, rather than in some distant and hostile spot where replacement would have been impossible and questions awkward. I was far too familiar with the way Christ looks after the practical side of the ministry to miss these signs. This was all his timing, and the question of the money was also in his hands.